Whoever you are, we welcome you. Wherever you come from, we welcome you. Whomever you love, we welcome you. My name is Lori McGee, and it is my privilege to serve as worship leader for today's service. I am joined in welcoming you today by many people, including Hal Walker, our director of music, Elaine Bowen, Vivian Sandlin, Kat Holtz, Christy Anderson, and Joel Slater, who are all participating in today's service. We are delighted to welcome you to this religious community. A longtime member of this community, Mike Krejci, is leaving us to begin a new journey in much warmer climes than we have here. Today at coffee hour, we will have a special celebration for Mike for you to have a chance to say goodbye and wish him well on his new journey. May this light kindle within us the warmth of compassion, the glow of love, the fire of commitment, and the light of truth. We, the member congregations of the Unitarian Universalist Association, covenant to affirm and promote the inherent worth and dignity of every person, justice, equity, and compassion in human relations, acceptance of one another and encouragement to spiritual growth in our congregations, a free and responsible search for truth and meaning, the right of conscience and the use of the democratic process within our congregations and in society at large, the goal of world community with peace, liberty, and justice for all, respect for the interdependent web of all existence of which we are a part. Come, let us worship together. To lead us into a time of shared silence, these words from Wendell Berry. When despair for the world grows in me, and I wake in the night at the least sound, in fear of what my life and my children's lives may be, I go and lie down where the wooddrake rests in his beauty on the water, and the great heron feeds. I come into the peace of wild things, who do not tax their lives with forethought of grief. I come into the presence of still water, and I feel above me the day-blind stars waiting with their light. For a time I rest in the grace of the world and am free. Each week when we gather for worship, we set aside time to widen the caring ministry of this congregation. We take time to memorialize those who have died, to celebrate with those who are joyous, and to call into this community of care all who need our love and support. Please hold in your hearts this week the family of Caroline Arnold. Caroline passed away earlier this week after a long battle with cancer. She was a longtime member of this church and worked very diligently to make it what it is today. And also hold in your hearts the Leeson family. Randy Leeson's father, Pete Leeson, passed away this week as well. They are inviting anyone who would care to join them for the calling hours for his father. That information can be found in the e-news that was sent out this week. Please join me now in the spirit of prayer or meditation, as is your practice. We have come together today not because we expect to find answers here, but rather because we expect to be encouraged in our questioning. We have come together today not because we expect to find perfect people here, but rather because we hope to find authentic people here. We have come together today not because we are certain of our own righteousness, but because we are continually searching for the right, the good, the uplifting. We have come together today not because we seek absolution for our sins and failures, but rather because we acknowledge our imperfections and seek the courage to make amends for those failures to ourselves and others. We have come together today not because we need to be told what to believe and how to act, but rather because we need each other's encouragement to act according to our own best beliefs. We have come together today not because we are hoping to find God in a scripture or a ritual, but rather because we are hoping to discover the divinity within our own hearts and within the hearts of others. We have come together today not because we believe that holiness exists within these walls alone, but rather to have our hearts and minds directed to the holiness in the world. For all these reasons, we have come together today. Amen, and blessed be.
Hi, my name is Kat Holtz, and I'm here to talk to you about the spirituality I find in my work with RE and OWL. I've served on the Religious Education Committee, or RE, for a few years, and it is quite a joy to work with the other committee members who are so strongly committed to the spiritual well-being of our children. At times, I'm not able to contribute as fully to the RE activities, partly because my disabilities keep me from climbing the stairs to the classrooms, and this prevents me from fully grasping the space challenges or assisting with the cleaning and the organizing. But this will change when we get our new building constructed. And my committee co-members are very understanding of this. The committee decides which curriculum for each age level to implement each year, and we provide support to the dedicated RE teachers, as well as some special activities, such as the church-wide Halloween party. And there's nothing more spiritual than that. I appreciate how our RE committee, teachers, and congregation value our children so highly and respect their opinions at all ages. I like the way we encourage intergenerational activities. I find great comfort in seeing kids make relationships with adults of different ages and generations. They are able to use them as resources when they have life difficulties, can ask them questions, hear alternate opinions, get information, and have fun. It is a solid groundwork to gain experience in dealing with the various people they will encounter as they grow throughout their lives. Hogwarts is one of the RE programs that occurs outside of Sunday services. This program uses the Harry Potter books as a way to explore our Unitarian Universalist principles. It nurtures the creativity and imagination of the children who attend, as well as the adults who plan and implement the activities. Recently, we adults have been engaging in some very deep and significant conversations about our classes and activities and ways to incorporate the UU values in a more conscious manner. Plus, Hogwarts is really fun, especially in Slytherin. My first connection to RE is OWL. OWL stands for Our Whole Lives and is a sexuality education program that spans the age groups. We began with the junior high level in 1999. Recently, we have added the elementary and the adult levels, with more to come, I hope. It is wonderful to be able to use my training and experience and expertise to provide the sexuality education to our children and work with the parents and congregations to provide this service. Fred Smith and I provide trainings to would-be instructors of other churches in our district and neighboring districts. Kathy Walker, Saul Flanner, Fred, and I are the local instructors for our church. We are about to begin another junior high level class for this school year. So what is religious and spiritual about sexuality education, you may ask? All of our seven principles are reflected in OWL and sexuality education. Most importantly, we want to support each individual child in their individual journey. Plus, we find access to accurate information to be a spiritual mission and a social justice issue. Sexuality represents at once the most simple, elemental aspect of human existence. Most of us wouldn't be here without it. And it is the most complex societal construct of biology, culture, media, etc. Providing this program speaks to me in the most religious ways. We want our kids and adults to approach sexuality in a thoughtful, meaningful, and spiritual way. We want to contrast to the over-sexualized popular culture. We want to give them skills and tools to negotiate these complexities. There is nothing like seeing a group of kind of goofy kids blossom into thoughtful young people over the course of the year. It is also a great deal of work. Do you know how energetic a group of 12-year-olds can be? Do you know how much food they can eat at snack time? And how many crumbs can be generated from snacks that don't appear to be made of crumb-like substances? Do you know how often I have found myself saying something to the effect of, "Can we please stop talking about math class and return to our oral sex discussion?" Do you know how amazing it is to have a kid do something so silly one minute and then express something so insightful and amazing the next? Or how they gain self-confidence and skill and self-expression and can articulate their passionate support of marginalized sexual minorities? I know I can speak for Fred, Kathy, and Saul, and myself, by saying that our OWL class is frequently the most spiritually amazing part of our week, and we are transformed by every group. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Vivian, and I'm here to talk a little bit about our social justice work that we do and plan and hope to do, intend to do in the future. A few years ago, members of our congregation organized an interfaith vigil in downtown Kent in support of the rights of immigrants. Some of you will remember this. We held respectful signs. Our minister, Reverend Melissa, led us in worship and prayer, and Lee Brooker from our church led us in singing. We planned the vigil as part of a nationwide protest by UUs and others against a law in Arizona that targeted immigrants for police investigation through what many regard as racial profiling. Later that same year, our congregation sponsored a community teach-in on the lives and struggles of immigrants in Ohio. Longtime church member Caroline Arnold wrote a press release that was published in the Record Courier newspaper. And I wrote that line a few days before Caroline passed away. And I just want to acknowledge the enormous contributions that Caroline made for so many years to the social justice work of this church through her activism, organizing, leadership of the Social Justice Committee, and also her writing, her wonderful writing that appeared regularly in Common Dreams Online and in the Record Courier newspaper and in other papers and publications. And we will miss her always and forever, always. She's irreplaceable. We screened a film titled El Norte, which was a fictional portrayal of an immigrant brother and sister who traveled without papers from Guatemala to the United States. And the screening was followed by our usual lively discussion. We organized a community dinner and the teach-in. Elaine and Bill Bowen prepared the meal. And then we gathered in the sanctuary to learn about what immigrants face in Ohio. Attorney Nancy Grimm explained the legal issues that undocumented immigrants face. Jeff Stewart of the Immigrant Worker Project spoke about the lives of immigrants here in Ohio and what we as a congregation can do to support them in their struggles to survive and thrive. The next day, Sunday, we took a special congregational offering for the Immigrant Worker Project. Each month, our congregation takes a special offering for a social justice project or program. We take special offerings for local, national, and international programs of all kinds, and we will be taking one of these special offerings today for the Palestine Children's Relief Fund. That'll be coming up. Our work in support of immigrants is one of the many ways in which we express and share our faith by working for justice in our community and in the world. Reverend Melissa recently did a sermon about the missional church, in which we do church not just inside our walls, but out in the world. For me personally, church life is meaningful because we work together to bring justice to the world, to create the beloved community here in the congregation and in the wider world. Part of our church mission is to inspire people to live caring lives of meaning and purpose. I get my personal sense of meaning and purpose from our work in the world. Not everyone will be inspired to work on behalf of immigrants, and some may disagree with this focus. Many of our church members are active in working for environmental justice and healing. Church members are active in working to stop fracking in Northeast Ohio. Others are working to make ours a green sanctuary as we expand our church facilities. Still others address issues of hunger and poverty. Church members and friends volunteer to prepare hot lunches for folks on Saturdays at Trinity Lutheran Church. From securing human rights to creating environmental justice to ending hunger and poverty, our members and friends are bringing our UU principles into the wider world. Now, working on behalf of immigrants is consistent with my belief in the inherent worth and dignity of every person, one of our UU principles. Today, we see immigrant children from Central America who have sought refuge here in the United States and who face deportation back to places where their circumstances are hopeless. Reverend Melissa went to the White House last month to stand with other UUs and people of faith to call for no more deportations. Now we have the opportunity as a congregation to stand together for our principles and to support immigrants who are far from home and in need of our support. We are invited on September 13th to join with other UUs and our partners from other faiths at the Akron Church in a free conference on immigrant rights, where we can learn how to get involved. Reverend Peter Morales, our UUA president, will speak, as will the head of the UCC Church. Jeff Stewart of the Immigrant Worker Project will lead workshops. And by just showing up, we can renew our commitment to stand with immigrants on the side of love and develop concrete strategies for making a difference. There are unlimited opportunities for folks of all ages to join in the work of social justice. Feel free to ask me or Reverend Melissa or anyone on the church board about how you can join in work that inspires you and makes a difference in the world. This is a time of renewal for our church. We have done good work, but we have so many opportunities to do more. If these walls could talk, they would say, "Don't just sit there. Go out and make a difference. Go out in the world and make your faith a living force for a better world. Do it now." We invite you to join us in doing it now and expanding our mission and vision beyond these church walls. Thank you.
I'm Joel Slater, and Lori McGee asked me to reflect on our church's history as seen through my eyes. So I told Lori that I'm old, I have myopia, I've had cataract surgery, taking drugs for glaucoma, so anything seen through my eyes should be really suspect. So my history first intersected with the Kent UU Church in 1968, when I transferred to Kent State University and became involved with a group that some of you might know, the Students of Democratic Society, which I realize as I say that, people of my age would know that immediately if you said SDS, but nowadays, who knows? It's a long time ago, I guess. Anyways, so I decided to join and add my voice for concern for civil rights and opposition for the war in Vietnam. George Hoffman, who had a memorial service here, was primarily responsible for developing a coffee house called the Yellow Unicorn, where draft counseling took place, and George was the primary person who did that, and I was proud to think of him as a friend of mine. And the most, I think, memorable event concerning the Yellow Unicorn was the kind of the riot of the Yellow Unicorn, kind of like maybe our Stonewall kind of event. where there was an actual physical encounter, fist fights even, at this church, when a number of people who were not supportive of draft counseling and were supportive of the war in Vietnam came down to beat a few people up, and the cops were called, and there were no major injuries. A little blood was spilled, but it wasn't too bad all in all. So I don't think very many students at that time were involved with the church as the church. It was the minister at that time was Peter Richardson, who was very supportive of the student activists. And then I graduated and did not have much to do with this church. I got married, and then Kathy and I became members of the North Hills Church. But then we moved back in 1972, where we became members very quickly of this church. And at that time, Violet Kochendorfer was the minister. And it seemed to us that there seemed to be some sort of underlying friction between her and the congregation. And our sense of it, again, which I shouldn't say our, my sense of it, was that it seemed to center around the issues of a kind of a humanism versus a more spiritual humanism. The minister tended to be more spiritual humanistic, and a lot of the members tended to be very, very secular and very, very atheistically oriented humanistic. So that seemed to be somewhat of a split. Before that time, though, while I was gone, there was a major split in the church over the phone tax. And I look at Gene here, hoping I'm not getting this totally wrong. And I think these were the Bill Schultz years, when this really did split the congregation. A number of the members were, the phone tax idea was that the phone tax was used to fund the war in Vietnam, and so there was a refusal to pay it, and a number of people found that intolerable and, in fact, left the church. So that was before we got here. And when, as I said, when Kathy and I did get here, there still seemed to be some tensions between humanism and a more spiritual approach. This was also the time that our first child was born, and I have a story to say about that, and I am aware that she's here. I was hoping she wouldn't be. But I was up in Putney, Vermont, at a conference about a long ways away from Robinson Memorial Hospital. So I get a call saying from Kathy saying that I'm a father, which kind of freaked me out because it was quite early. And so I left Putney, Vermont via plane to Burlington, Vermont. And if you know me, I hate planes. In fact, on the phone, Kathy said, "You're a father, you have to get here." And I said, "Oh, I'll take the first bus." She said, "No, you have to fly." So I flew to Burlington, Vermont. From Burlington, Vermont, I flew to Philadelphia. From Philadelphia, I flew to Pittsburgh. We rented a car in Pittsburgh, and I drove straight to Robinson Memorial, which was, for me, very difficult because I was up well over 24 hours. So when I get to the hospital, I ask Kathy to go sit in the chair and let me take a nap in the bed for a couple hours. And then I was going to go see Sarah. So she said no. And then, so I go to see my daughter, and she's, you know, I don't know, she's like 3 pounds something ounces. And I remember my first words so well when I saw her. And this is an honest to God truth. I said, "My God, I have a daughter who's an australopithecine." And the reason I said that was, there's a reason. Because she was born so premature that the head bones didn't really become very solid. And so what happened was, during the birth process, one bone was forced over the other. So she had like this simian crest down her head. I said something else. Kathy made me edit it out. If you want to know what it was, see me later. Okay, So as our children grew up in this church, we found this church was not particularly child-friendly. There was no RE program, and there seemed to be no interest in an RE program until Kathy started trying to get one organized. And there was some opposition to that, feeling that, you know, children either belong in the church, in the sermon, listening, like the good old Puritans back in the 1600s, or if they're so young, then they should be like out in a nursery, not in the service at all. So I'm glad to say and proud of my wife for fighting that battle and getting an RE program begun in this church. Also, I have another fond memory of the history of this church. Kathy and I were one of the first professors of Hogwarts. And I have this great memory of Hogwarts, and I won't name names, but he's here also. I was hoping it wouldn't be. This professor was teaching, I think it was the third and fourth year, fourth grades, and they were terrible. They weren't listening, and they were talking, and he blurted out at them. He said, "You have to listen to me. I'm a tenured professor." And as I recall, it didn't help much. So after Vi, we went through a number of ministers until relatively quickly. Rod Thompson became a minister for a while. When he left, we had an interim minister, Mary Nottavange. And Ted and I share the opinion that she was one of our very favorite ministers. And we both agree she was highly intellectual and gave in these incredibly cerebral talks. Ted and I would talk afterwards and say, "We didn't hardly understand anything of that, but we loved it." So that's. So after her, Julianne Silberman became our minister, and I think Julianne was very successful in finding a kind of a ground that brought us together with both, with whatever your opinion was, no matter how where you were on the theological or atheological perspective. Bell curve. she was able to bring us together, and the church saw some growth at that time. And then we had Reverend Melissa Carville Zeemer, who seems very capable of finding a common path and finding a common ground between the often conflicting forces in our religion of institutionalism and anti-institutionalism. And again, through my eyes, most importantly, I love her.
It was 1999, and I was at the lowest point I'd ever been in my life. Recently divorced, I felt alone and depressed as I wandered aimlessly through life. I had forsaken any form of organized religion decades earlier. Yet unexpectedly, I felt the need for spiritual nourishment and discovered that it couldn't be fulfilled in the church of my childhood. I walked through these sanctuary doors not knowing a soul here. 15 years later, I'm now at the pinnacle of happiness in my life. Due to this church community, I have a large and wonderful circle of friends. I've stretched my comfort zone in speaking from the heart and performing music. I enrolled in seminary, and I met the love of my life, who is now my partner in marriage. My life has been utterly transformed by the acceptance and personal growth offered here. Not everyone has experienced the degree of transformation that I have, but for many here, something special has touched our lives by participating in this community. I'll describe one way in which it can happen. Lori asked me to speak about our church's lay ministry. Ministry comes from the Greek word meaning to serve. Ministry is work that many of us, in fact, most of us, engage in to make this church community and the outside world a better place. I'll give you some examples of our ministries. For people who enjoy hospitality work, there are opportunities to be greeters or help with coffee hour. For people who like the visual arts, we have volunteers who share their art on the walls, decorate the chancel at holiday time, take photos for the newsletter, design our website, and draw with children at coffee hour. Musical opportunities abound. Readers can join the book group or the library committee. Volunteer opportunities are numerous for people who want to develop leadership skills, engage in fundraising, public relations, social justice work, teaching children, leading adult religious exploration, yard work, cooking, and many more. Once a year, we hold a ministry fair to provide information about the many opportunities for involvement. And I hope you'll check out this year's ministry fair, which will be downstairs on September 14th after each service. Every one of you has talents and gifts of value to others. People with a particular passion can actually create ministries, as Becky Haynes has done with Hogwarts and Saunas with our sacred singing circle. Or you can participate in the numerous and ever-changing ministries offered. If you can simply talk and are willing to share your knowledge and insights with others, and in turn listen to them, you may be ministering to another and not even realize it. As Reverend Melissa says, we are here to grow our souls. And diverse ways are available to do this, regardless of whether you're seeking intellectual stimulation, emotional uplift, fellowship, or spiritual growth. Shortly after I started here, I was asked to work with two others on revising the church bylaws. Although I felt emotionally drained at the time, I agreed, recognizing that this was a low-intensity commitment. Bylaw work may not sound glamorous to some of you, but I was excited because it's an area where I had experience and I felt I can contribute something. That work led to participation on the Organizational Restructuring Committee and eventually serving on the church board. Christy, the introvert, became a committee junkie. I served on the nominating committee, small group ministry, steering committee, Sunday program committee, and adult religious exploration committee. I also became a worship associate, pastoral associate, and commissioned lay leader. Never in a million years could I have imagined that working on bylaws would be the first step in a long journey that aroused my spiritual sense so much that I became a minister. Even in our faith, miracles can happen.
Indeed they do, because it has turned this formerly militant atheist into a devout and faithful Unitarian Universalist. For once, I will try and keep it short. Spirituality and covenant through my eyes in 3 minutes or less. Here we go. We've talked a lot about spirituality lately, and I understand quite clearly that there are as many definitions of it as there are people in this room, plus one. I fall back to definitions as a starting point. Spirituality, the quality or state of being concerned with religion or religious matters. There are those two words together, spirituality and religion. As a side note, I will tell you that I have found my spirituality here through service. And it's a long list, but it includes everything from board service to multiple committees to nursery care to singing and finding my voice through that. My definition of spirituality is far different than your definition. Several weeks ago, those of you who were here might remember we had a long discussion about folks who define themselves as spiritual but not religious. I contend and I suggest to you that every person in this room and every Unitarian Universalist is both, no matter how much you protest. We are a religion. Unitarian Universalism, Unitarianism, Universalism are centuries old, born out of the Judeo-Christian heritage. And please don't cringe at the word Christian. It is part of our past. It is also part of our future. We are a religion. We are an organized religion, most of the time. But we are. Do not be afraid of that word. It gives what we do authenticity and meaning. What connects us in our differences, as you use, are our common values, what have been touched on time and time again this morning as our principles. These are our religious guide to living. Looking at our principles, we encounter a most interesting word. We covenant to affirm and promote. Covenant. It was one of those religious words I wasn't familiar with when I first came here. As a matter of fact, I was rather anti most religious words and avoided any God talk like the plague. And yet here I am speaking to you about religion and spirituality and covenant. That has been my growth curve over the last 13 years. Covenant. As a verb, it means promise. As a noun, it means a contract or a pledge. What are our promises to each other? What are our promises to our world? We can find clues right in the principles that Lori spoke of early in the service. We see words like respect, dignity, encouragement, compassion. This is how we promise to be together. May it always be so. Blessed be.
Every time I put a service together, I always wonder if it's going to be long enough. And clearly, that's not a problem this morning. So if you could just bear with me a few moments. I'd like to start this with an informal survey, so show of hands. How many of you here discovered Unitarian Universalism in, say, the last 10 years or so? Show of hands. Okay. So of those folks, how many of you researched UUism before you got here? Okay. And who checked out the church website before you got here? Okay, quite a few. So we've got some research people out there. All right. I could raise my hands to all of those questions, too. I was terrified of coming here without some prior knowledge of what was going to happen. So I did my research as well. And in fact, a lot of people do. According to UUA.org, which is the Unitarian Universalist Association website, roughly 51% of the visitors to UUA.org, the homepage, are first-time visitors. Half. That's a lot. And web search engines like Google and Yahoo, et cetera, account for over 56% of UUA.org traffic. That's also a lot. And the search terms that lead people primarily to Unitarian Universalism or the UUA include the topics that I've shared with you this morning, like social justice, religious education, ministry, history, beliefs. It's Unitarian Universalism and whatever is important to that person. And so those words account for about 10,000 visits per year. And Facebook actually accounts for about 18% of that traffic. So many of us come here for the first time because we are missing something in our lives. Some people know what that something is. Perhaps you have children and you want a religious education program for them. Or people are very interested in social justice and want a more organized way to work on that in the world. But some people, I am one, just can't quite put their finger on what's missing, but they know something is. I know now that what was missing was a deeper sense of spirituality and a loving community, but I could not have told you that 10 years ago when I first came. I had driven by this church for many years before I first decided to come in. I was raised Catholic and moved away from the Catholic Church in my early 20s and remained unchurched for a good 15 years or so after that. I was very anti-organized religion. But I kept driving by. I lived in Stowe, went to school in Kent, and then I worked in Kent, and I would drive by and drive by, and I would read the sign. And the sermon topics were rather intriguing, and I noticed the rainbow sticker, and my first thought was, I wonder if they know what that means. Because it didn't occur to me, as a gay person, it did not occur to me that there would be a church that would, one, accept gay people, and two, put a sticker on their sign. So clearly they must just like rainbows or something. I don't know. But I kept driving by, and the sticker got a little less bright, you know, they fade. But the sermon titles really led me to think, maybe they do know what that means. So I looked into it, and I went to the church website, because our website is printed right on the sign. So I went to it, and the first thing I saw was, we are a welcoming congregation. And the website was much different 10 years ago, but it was there, and there was a pink triangle. And I thought, oh my God, they do know what that means. So I read about it. I read what a welcoming congregation is, which meant that this community had gone through a program to understand how better to welcome LGBT, lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender individuals into the congregation. So I thought, all right, well, I got to give these people a shot, right? So I checked out the website, the service times, and then I explored the website, which led me to the OMD website, which is our district homepage, and then the UUA website, and I read all about it. And I really thought this is something I could get behind. So I came to my first service, which was May 1st, 2005, which was May Day, and it actually happened to be Melissa's candidacy service. I could not have walked in on a better day. Seriously. And the church at that time had some nice pews, and then the back pews were those old theater pews, if you remember, that had like springs sticking through. And I was way overdressed and, you know, way too fancy. I realized that when I got here. And the sermon, the service was included in spiritual elements. They were talking about May Day, which is a sort of pagan festival, and they sang the hymn that's gay and straight together, and I thought, oh my God, what is this place? And I've come ever since. I've never stopped coming. That was my first. So Melissa and I started on the same day, basically, because that was my first service. And within those first few weeks, I met all of the people who contributed to today's service. And because of them and their passion for this faith, this church, and the areas of ministry that they spoke about, I am here still. And I don't think they know that, so now you do. In fact, this is what I love most about this church, is this vast difference of beliefs in stories and passions, and yet here we are all together, no matter what our differences are. And as Elaine mentioned, we are a covenantal faith. And what I've discovered over the years is that not many people know what that means. So here's another survey. How many of you have ever tried to or had to explain what UU is to somebody? Okay. How many of you thought that it was a little challenging? Almost everybody. Okay. So clearly, the average person is not used to what a covenantal faith is. Most people are used to creedal religions, which is a belief in a specific set of statements that are required for membership in that religion. Those are much easier to explain because most people, even unchurched people, have had contact with some sort of creedal religion, which is not to say that religions aren't complex. It's just more, it's easier to explain them. And so this difficulty results in a whole host of UU jokes. And probably you've heard some. Here are just a couple. A traveler couldn't find the local Unitarian Universalist church in a specific town. After looking in the center of town and then moving out into the suburbs and then further out into the surrounding countryside, the traveler asked a farmer, "Am I too far out for the UU church?" The farmer's reply, "Nobody is too far out for the UU church." A definition, Unitarian Universalism, where all your answers are questioned. Why do UUs go to church? Because some questions just can't be answered by Google. That's literally a joke. So these jokes, while funny, of course, ring with some truth, and you're laughing because you know that the truth that stands there, which brings me to my last point this morning, which is an elevator speech. This is a common word that gets passed around quite a bit. An elevator speech is a short statement lasting the length of an elevator ride, which is used to quickly define and describe a person, organization, event, and its value proposition. And that last statement is really important. According to an article in Business Week magazine, a value proposition is a promise of value to be delivered and acknowledged, and a belief from the customer that the value will be appealed and experienced. Even though this model was developed for businesses, it can apply here to us. We are the business owners, and our customers are potential visitors to our church. Now, I'm not saying we should treat the church like a business, because, of course, we want our denomination to grow. I feel it's important to be able to explain who we are and what our beliefs are in a succinct and compelling way. So here's my elevator speech. Unitarian Universalism is a living tradition that is open to all people because of its diverse belief system. It embodies the idea that our promises bind us together and we hold each other accountable to live out our values in our daily lives. It's not perfect, to be sure, but it's a start. It gets the conversation going, at least. So my last question, do you have an elevator speech? Who has an elevator speech? Raise your hand. Oh, not very many. Okay. So for those of you that don't have one, it's my call to you to create one. And when you do, please feel free to share it with me. I would love to hear it. May it be so, and amen.
So, as I mentioned earlier today, we are going to be taking a special collection. And I think this one is particularly timely. This is a special collection for the Palestine Children's Relief Fund. This fund was started by Kent resident Steve Sosaby, who was just an ordinary guy and decided he needed to make a difference and that there was a need. And so he started the Palestine Children's Relief Fund to provide medical care and other assistance for children, first in Palestine, but now it's expanded to the whole Middle Eastern area. And they serve particularly children who have been injured in war or have been suffered illnesses that have been untreated because of the wars there. And so please make your checks payable to the UU Church of Kent with PCRF in the memo line, or use one of the pew envelopes marking the special collection box, and you'll get credit for this.
Reminded that we are part and participants of the universe, let us go forth from the quiet of this hour, encouraged to strive toward faithfulness to the best in ourselves, in others, and all of creation. Go in peace.